This podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who reminds you to attend the 6th Annual Dog Day Afternoon, Saturday, April 24th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Hopewell Park in Columbia, where canines and their people will enjoy an afternoon of contests, treats, activities, and lots of tail-wagging fun. CA also reminds you that village elections are held Saturday, April 21st. For specific information about a particular village's elections, visit columbiavillages.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Paul Lemley, the president of the Howard County Education Association, also known as the Howard County Teachers Union. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started? You had some good stuff?
It's a story that's not a story. I don't know why, when an organization picks a new logo, it's got to be a story, but it is. I mean, the CA logo palooza. First of all, it was news when CA announced they were going to drop the people tree from their logo because they didn't really own the rights to use the people tree. That belongs to Howard Hughes, but they created a new logo, and it's like a so what. But oh my God, this is a big news story.
We talked about this over lunch, like we talk about a lot of things. And you know what struck me about this was this had a little bit of that Rouse stuff in it. You know, the Rouse vision.
This is what he wanted the logo to look like.
This is what he wanted. And how dare they change the logo without letting us, you know, let us give our input.
Yeah.
And get our opinion,
vote on it,
yeah. And have a charrette.
A citizens committee.
Come on, it's a logo.
It's a logo.
Whatever.
The one good news is we did find out. What do you think of it? Since we're talking about it, I mean, do you like it?
You know, I'm left kind of flat. I think if they wanted a new logo, they should have done a new logo.
Yeah.
I think they tried really hard to keep it kind of representative
people
of tree-ish. People tree-ish.
They even went with great pains sewing it.
Some people said it looked like, you know, a little fish. Other people said it looks like a little sperm. And, you know, I don't know.
Flower.
Flower, like a flower child flower. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of left flat.
Well, maybe the sperm goes because they talk about, you know, for growth of people.
And then there's that. So we talked last time about the Maryland General Assembly and how they failed
the great state meltdown.
Yeah, how they failed to do their budget.
Yeah.
Pass a budget other than the doomsday budget.
Right.
And we're still sitting around waiting to see what's going to happen. We're not sure if the governor's going to call a special session. And word has it that he's
going to call a special session.
Well, he's kind of sitting around first wanting to make sure Mike.
He wants them to squirm a little bit.
Referring to Mike Bush and Mike Miller, the head of the Senate and the House of Delegates. And he wants to make sure they've got a plan that they've agreed to before he calls a special session. He does not want any shenanigans taking place. And as I understand it, any bill can be introduced in a special session.
Anything.
And it's got to go through its, you know, its first reading, its second reading, and all that stuff. So I think he's really reluctant to do it until he's darn sure that it's going to happen and happen right.
But it's going to happen. I mean,
I think it's going to have to.
I'd lay good money that they're going to get back together and they're going to straighten out. And of course, the problem is we're right in the middle of a county budget, too. The counties are kind of, they're in a tough spot.
Well, and I think County Executive Ullman was supposed to release his budget today.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it this morning before the show, but I suspect that that's going to happen before the day's out. And they're going ahead with it with the understanding that, you know what, it may need to get tweaked along the way.
Well, you know, and Tom Cole had an interesting post on his blog this morning on HOCO Rising when he talked about, you know, we call it the doomsday budget, and some Republicans are very happy with it. Or not just Republicans, I mean some independents are, thinking, you know what, states...
Let it go. Don't call a special session at $21,000 a day. This is, you know what, it's a cut.
But as Tom pointed out, this budget was really designed to be punitive. So it was to scare people into getting a deal made on the real budget.
Yeah, that really worked.
They're all Democrats, and they can't... I mean...
It's not like it was a bipartisan struggle.
Yeah, I know. What Will Rogers, I think Will Rogers had the famous quote. He says, "I'm not a member of an organized party. I'm a Democrat." it's a mess. And I hope they get it squared away. But I think there's going to be a special session. And I think everything's going to come back home to roost. You know, the only question is whether they'll deal with gambling.
I had opportunity to attend the Howard County Chamber of Commerce's legislative update the day before yesterday. And
one of my favorite people was there, Delegate Frank Turner.
Well, and you know what? He was one of very few politicians that showed up for this thing. Usually you end up with, you know, sort of 10 people representing the state.
And at least he went there to get his medicine.
There were not a lot of people there, and I'm not sure if they were embarrassed. The people that did show up, they were asked whether they were embarrassed as elected officials for failing to do the one constitutionally obligated thing they're supposed to do, which is pass a budget.
Right.
And some of them, I think, were very kind of sheepish and kind of embarrassed about the whole
thing. Did they say so?
And then they went as far as saying so.
Others apologized.
Okay. Others kind of pointed fingers at Mike and Mike and said it was their fault. Yeah. And, you know, they had a deal and it was the whole gambling thing that really kind of knocked it off track at the 11th hour. You know what? Shame on all of them.
Shame on all of them. So. Elkridge is in the news again.
Elkridge is in the news, and you love Elkridge news.
I live right next to Elkridge. I don't know why people think I don't like Elkridge, but
I think you love Elkridge news because Elkridge hates you.
I don't think all of Elkridge. I actually had I have a friend who lives in Elkridge, and he lives in West Elkridge. And I really think Elkridge is two communities. I think on the west side of 95, it's one community, and the east side of 95, there's a different Elkridge, and they don't really, they're not the same. I mean, you get different.
Can I digress just for a second? So you think there are two communities. There's a west and an east Elkridge.
Yeah.
But you won't agree with me that Columbia and Ellicott City are different.
No, I kind of agree with you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. They're changing. They're coming
Dave, you got that recorded, right?
But
all right,
my
thanks.
Point, they're becoming more together. I mean, like Dorsey Hall is Columbia. But it feels like Ellicott City in some places. So.
Okay, why don't you go back to Elkridge?
Yeah. Okay. So, I guess I want to start with the intermodal. You know, there are people up in arms in Elkridge because it's one of, actually, Hanover is one of the four sites being considered for this new CSX intermodal terminal. And, of course, this is going through a long, drawn-out process. The NEPA process you hear them talk about with, you know, and federal review and... and it's slowly creeping forward. Well, in the middle of all that, news came out this week that Laurel Sand and Gravel wants to put, if in case the CSX doesn't move forward to purchase that land in Hanover, they want to put an asphalt plant there.
So let me get this straight. Neighbors can either have a roaring train or they can have a
stinky,
perpetual smell of asphalt.
A stinky asphalt plant. Well, guess what? Yeah. And, well,
right.
Yeah. A school in a school along the railroad tracks. It's zoned M2. This is a heavy industrial piece of ground.
Yeah, we've been down this road.
Yeah, so this is what's going to happen. And I said before, no matter what's...
Anybody, be careful what you fight or what you ask for.
Yeah, no matter what anybody proposes for the site, they're not going to like just because of the nature of the zoning.
Also in Elkridge, we have a little criminal story, a little...
Cold case.
Kind of interesting. A woman disappeared in 1991, apparently... got in a fight with her husband, and she walked off with $4,000, was never to be seen again.
So was the story.
So was the story, according to the husband. And he says, I don't know where she went.
Yeah.
Supposedly left her, 5 and 11-year-old kid. Come on.
Turns out she didn't go far.
How many moms walk away from their 5 and 11-year-old kids? That just doesn't happen. So they got a tip, and we're all kind of curious what the tip was.
But where the tip came from.
Where the tip came from. We're thinking maybe the second wife who's now... going through a divorce.
Or, you know, maybe one of the kids. Like I said, one of them was 11 times.
Maybe they remember something.
Yeah, maybe they remembered something.
Well, they found her buried in concrete underneath one of two sheds on the property.
Yeah, I was big. First of all, kudos to the Howard County detectives.
Investigators,
That stayed on top of this. And it hopefully brings closure to those kids and that family. But,
And you know what? I don't mean to make fun out of such a tragedy, but you know, here this guy, he commits this murder some 20-plus years ago.
And,
I guess 3 months go by, 6 months go by, you kind of go, you know what? I can't believe I pulled this off. Like, 5 years go by and 10 years go by. He must have thought after 20 years,
I'm done. I'm
done.
Free.
You know, I'm golden.
Knock, knock, knock.
See ya. He's off to the slammer.
Yeah, he's off to the slammer. Another Elkridge story this week. Troy Park Tennis and Sports Center doesn't look like it's going to happen. Art Tolick has led up a group called the Howard County Tennis Partners that wanted to bring a world-class tennis stadium and facility to Howard County so they could attract some major tournaments here.
Like 30 courts, I think, like an 8,000-seat stadium.
I saw the designs for it. It's beautiful, you know. But, $44 million complex. Now, they had tried to raise money privately to get
this. The Wimbledon of Elkridge.
The Wimbledon of Elkridge. You know, and the county was behind. The county donated 13 acres of land in the Troy Hill Park for this to happen. And then said to the partners, you go ahead and raise the money. Well, they were trying to raise money in the middle of a recession. I mean,
it was like $40, $45 million, I think, they were looking to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And, you know, even in a good time, it's tough. But I'm sure raising at the time when they did was even harder. So then they went back to the county and asked for some help. And the county commissioned a study through the Maryland Stadium Authority to look into what the economic feasibility is. And they said, no. It'll be a money losing venture.
And County Executive Ballman, to his credit, he looked at this and said, "You know what? This just ain't a priority right now. Right. I mean, there are a lot of things that we need to be spending money on, and the word from the state is tenuous. And you know what? We're not going to spend money on this.
So for Elkridge, intermodal terminals, asphalt plants, yes. Tennis, not so much. That'll get a call.
You'll get a call.
Yeah, I got to get a call on that one. Moving on. Food. A lot of food stories this week. First of all, there's big news. The chef owner of the Milton Inn up in northern Baltimore, a very popular restaurant, has bought a place out in Highland and going to open up the Highland Inn.
It's original.
It's original. But, you know, I saw the property. It's a beautiful site. He should be able to create a nice little atmosphere there. And that'll be interesting to see. But we'll do more on that later. Actually, I just found it. I was looking for Brian Boston's the guy's name. The big story on food this week, though, and this is not a local story, except for that we have Starbucks everywhere around town. Starbucks news in the Associated Press this morning was that Starbucks is going to stop using crushed insects in their...
Little red beetles, to be specific.
Yeah, they're going to stop putting crushed insects in their Frappuccinos. Who knew?
I'm going to stick to my lattes.
Yeah. I mean, apparently they've been using a red dye that is derived from crushed beetles.
And let's be honest. I mean, it is a commonly used insect for red food coloring. It's used in other things.
Until today, I did not know that.
Not just Starbucks coffee.
But I'm going to stay away from any red drinks until I know whether there's crushed insects in it or not. Our guest is looking at his drink. It's not red, though.
It is a bright neon yellow, however.
There's probably some red in there.
Another food news is Matthew Milani, the proprietor, chef, chief cook, and bottle washer of the Rumor Mill restaurant in Ellicott City, was recognized by the the Restaurant Association of Maryland as the Restauranter of the Year. So congratulations.
That's quite an accomplishment.
That's quite an accomplishment. Congratulations to Matt. It is. And at the same time, just across the border in Sykesville, Baldwin Station was named Maryland's favorite restaurant at the 58th annual.
That's right on Main Street in Sykesville, isn't it? A neat little place.
It's right by the railroad track. It's an old train station.
Yeah.
It is. It's a neat little place. McCormick at their Stars of the Industry Awards named Baldwin Station Restaurant of the Year. So, yeah, again, it's not Howard County. Right across the border, easy for people to get to. It's worth a trip to Sykesville to see Baldwin Station. So, yeah, a little bit of food news for us. And
Speed cameras are back in the news.
Speed cameras are back in the news. Thank you. That was my next story. And this was a great story by Brandy Jefferson in Elkridge Patch. It turns out the speed cameras have caught 23 police cars. And, of course, if they're going to an emergency, they don't have to pay the fine. But if they're not running an emergency and they get a speeding ticket, they have to pay it.
But, you know, I don't know a lot about the Freedom of Information Act, but I'd be really curious to see who paid those tickets when they weren't speeding.
Yeah, I very seriously doubt it comes out of the officer's pocket.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
So does it just go from $40 from one pile of the police department to another pile of the police department? Or?
Which is kind of funny, because once you do all that budgetary movement of dollars, it probably costs more to actually accomplish that than the ticket itself.
Yeah. Well, there were some other statistics, too, in this article. It said school buses have also been caught.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem.
Four other.
You needed to say that, didn't you?
I mean, given the rationale for the cameras and the locations that they're in.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this before. You know, when they're, you know, spring break, they're activated and running. Well, guess what? School's not in session during spring break. So, I mean,
they're out there at 8 o'clock at night.
Right.
You know, when most activities of schools are it's... Well, there were some other interesting stats, though, in Brandy's article. She said that there have been 455 repeat offenders. One person has had five citations. 15 people have had three citations. So, I mean, come on. After you get a couple, you think, all right, I think I better watch these things.
Not much of a deterrent, is it, for those people anyway?
And the record for breaking the speed cam record, 82 miles an hour in a 40 mile an hour zone.
You know what? I'm surprised it's not more than that, to be honest.
Yeah. There's not more than 82?
Yeah.
I mean, 82 is pretty fast on a 40 mile. That's double the speed.
We're not talking about the interstate.
Right.
Yeah, but
this isn't 95.
You know what? But there are roads out there where there are schools out there that are located on long straightaways.
Yeah.
That are really only 25 or 30 or 40 miles an hour because it's a school. Yeah. And you can really get away with more.
Yeah, I suppose.
I'm just saying. All right. Our last story is a tragic story, but we feel like we want to raise awareness along with a lot of other people. And, of course, I'm referring to the suicide death of Grace McComas from Glen Elle High School.
Very sad.
And I think she was a junior. Committed suicide on Easter Sunday after having been bullied, cyberbullying specifically. And, just a tragic story. And, the only good thing I can say about this is that there's been a ton of talk about it. It's gotten national press. Ray Rice of the Ravens, who is has a charity.
This is kind of his thing. It's his thing.
Cyberbullying. Yeah, and teen suicide. He's going to be doing a town hall meeting here in in Howard County. I know current and former American Idol contestants have tweeted about it. So it really has gotten some national attention, and I think rightly so. Bullying is it's a horrible thing. It's every kid goes through it at some degree, and it's got to be managed.
It does. I mean,
and it's unfortunate that it came to this for this family, because it is a tragedy.
It's awful. I mean, you have a daughter. I have a daughter. It breaks your heart.
And for those that haven't had the opportunity to see it, the father of this young girl did an amazing video montage of photographs and video clips. As a eulogy to her. And anybody who's a parent needs to look at this thing. And what struck me was this kid was just another normal kid. There was nothing weird or unusual about her. Pictures, throwing leaves up in the backyard, playing with the dog, food fight with your siblings, vacations at the beach. It was just another normal kid.
You know what we should probably do is maybe our producer can provide a link to that up on our and then there's that page on Hokumojo. That'd be great. Or we'll put it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, either good way. Suggestion. Yeah, yeah. So,
Should we do a little bit about our sponsor before we jump into
our
guest? Okay. Well, again, our sponsor, and we thank them very much, is the Columbia Association, who we made a little fun of with their logo palooza this week. But they got a big, it's a big day in Columbia tomorrow. Tomorrow is the village elections, and we talked about that before. It's going to be hard to get people out. People aren't really paying attention. A lot of the races are uncontested. But again, even if it's an uncontested race, these are people giving, volunteering their time. You should come out and vote for them if you live in the villages. Show them that you appreciate the time that they're putting in. And actually, one contested race in Harper's Choice, so that there is something going on. But get out and vote in your village elections. Meet some neighbors. And also, stop by Hopewell Park for the Dog Day, Columbia Dog Days afternoon. That'll be fun, especially if you have your dog and bring it by. Good day for that. But more importantly, Columbia has been doing, or Columbia Association has been doing a speaker series. They're bringing people from around the country and various experts. They've done some in conjunction with Howard Hughes, but they're bringing a bicycle advocate, a Jennifer Toole, a nationally recognized expert in bicycle and pedestrian planning and design, will be coming down on April 25th at 7:30 at Slayton House. So if you're interested in bicycle friendly community that we're trying to create, and our guest was just telling us that when he first moved to Columbia, they only had one car. His wife used to get to work, and he used to ride his bike to get to school. So, Columbia's always been kind of bike friendly, but we need to take it to the next step, make wider bike lanes, and maybe Jennifer Toole will offer some insight into that. So if you're into that kind of thing, April 25th, Slayton House, 7:30, don't miss it.
And you know what? I was in Sedona a couple weeks ago, and I was amazed at even the main roads out there. They have a separate little lane. It's probably 4 feet wide on the right-hand side for bikes, and it was awesome.
And the county's done some of that. Oakland Mills has, and some of the roads through Oakland Mills have gotten that extra wide lane for bicycles. I think it's great.
It's nice to see Columbia Association taking a lead on that.
Yeah, it really is. So. It's kudos to the association.
Paul Lemley, our guest.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for joining
us. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you being here. tell us a little bit about yourself. You're okay. Obviously the president of the Howard County Education Association, which I kind of joked and jabbed a little bit about being, which is really the teachers' union, if I'm not mistaken, by and large.
Well, yeah, numerically.
Yes.
But it's important to recognize the other people that we represent.
Custodians?
No. Custodians are AFSCME.
Oh.
And principals have a separate association, too. But everybody between
a
custodian...
Know that?
I did know that.
And a principal, yeah. I know.
It's unreal.
All the organizing. So we're, you know, secretaries, counselors, psychologists, nurses, teachers.
What percentage are teachers?
What percentage of the teachers?
Yeah, no, what percentage of union members are teachers?
80.
Okay. Do you have to, if you're a teacher in Howard County system, do you have to be a member of the union?
You don't. No. I came from Washington State, which was a closed shop state, and there you had to pay dues or pay dues and join.
Yeah.
And no, you don't have to join.
And what percentage of the teachers in Howard County are members?
90.
Okay. So you came from the West Coast?
Yeah, I was only there for 2 years. My wife is in grad school there. Loved Seattle, and it was a bike-friendly town.
Good coffee, too.
Great seafood, great coffee, all types of great food there. But yeah, I moved there from New Orleans.
Okay.
So that's where my family still lives. And
then came out here to Howard County?
I did. My
as
wife,
a teacher?
Government job, so
okay.
I figured I could do what I do anywhere. Very, very happy to land a job at Wild Lake at the time.
My alma mater.
Yeah. It was. There was a new principal there who hired me, and there was a lot of...
Who was that? Was that
Wesley Whitaker.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of school spirit. Just a great place to work. Remains so.
And what kind of a teacher were you?
At first, a special ed teacher.
We're going to talk about bad teachers later.
Yeah, we will. A real good one, I think. You know, I shouldn't blow the horn for myself, but I was a senior class teacher of the year in 2010.
Great. Congratulations.
I was a Howard County Outstanding Technology Using Educator. But more importantly for me, I was like a program builder. What I wanted to do is get students doing things that they weren't normally doing in school. And I pitched a law class to them. For electives to run in Howard County schools, students have to sign up for them. We don't just offer an elective and hope they come. We sign them up, then offer the class. So I recruited about 100 students to sign up for a law class that created four sections of it and then built a connection in the Supreme Court. Or I should say our students built that connection. I took them the first time for oral arguments in a free speech case that was really interesting. They took an off day to go because I didn't even know if we could get in to see the arguments. It was election day of 2008. And so some of my students saw that election and the Supreme Court on the very same day. But what happened was a Supreme Court police officer, who's a Wild Lake graduate herself, saw a Wild Lake sweatshirt on a kid, chatted him up, and he was so great, so respectful, so awesome, as Wild Lake students are.
Absolutely.
I'm not making this up. She said, "Hey, teacher, next time you guys want to come down here, we'll provide the tickets." She approaches the justices directly and says,
"Oh, cool.
You know, can we get some students in?"
That's great.
So
what a great opportunity.
Yeah, seven times in 2 years, we took students to hear oral arguments at the Supreme Court.
As a social studies teacher, it's got to be great having Washington right down the road.
I mean, the only thing better would be to be in it.
Yeah, right.
So we don't have to do the bus ride, but yeah, it's built to order do that.
Walk me through the transition of being a teacher and loving it and thinking you're good at it and obviously being recognized for it to sort of taking a quasi-sabbatical to kind of do what you do now.
A foolish thing to do.
We're good at that.
Yeah. I mean, so there were... I was aware of...
There's a difference between a union leader and a teacher, isn't there?
There is. There is. I'm sure we'll talk about that, too. For me, I was the politics guy in our association. I was the government relations chair
for
maybe 6 months. And my predecessor, Ann DeLacy, was term limited, and I was aware of two opponents that were going to run, and I wasn't satisfied with either one, and I thought...
So it was time for dirty tricks then.
I thought down the line I could potentially be association president,
right.
You know, another 6 years
right.
away. So campaign now.
Right.
Lay the groundwork. I'm going to lose, right? I'm going to go out, push them to be better candidates.
Your token run.
Forcing them to be in the
right.
schools, right? Because
right.
I figured the biggest thing for the association president that I hadn't seen was a real presence in the schools. Talk to your members. And so I was going to force them to do that.
Okay.
So I set up like 20 school visits, and we went to the schools together, and we talked to the teachers, and they elected the wrong guy.
<You know? laughs> It often happens. So there, and then you're here. And you stepped into the middle of it. It's time to start getting the nitty-gritty here.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason why you're on here today is, your group, HCEA, has taken a lot of heat for your endorsements in the for the school board race. That's it. Your endorsements stay the same. There'll be no change for the general election. They're the same.
If we had lost,
you would have filled the spot.
We might have.
Yeah.
But yeah, they'll stay the same.
But all three of the candidates that you endorsed have made it to the general election.
Right.
But none of the people you endorsed were incumbents.
Correct.
And one of the reasons you gave for that was that there was a drop in confidence amongst the members you polled.
Yeah, I think that was. It wasn't that didn't come up in the Government Relations Committee, and our board. We didn't say, we know the members are dissatisfied with the board, so therefore we have to choose non-incumbents. It happened,
And we should point out, the members don't all vote on your endorsements.
Correct.
It's done by a back door or a closed door, smoke-filled room type
yeah.
thing, political deal-making.
Cigars,
you guys
Scotch.
Say. And surprise, guess one of the people they endorsed is the former president of the union.
Well,
come on.
Now, realize that our members would have done that had we voted.
How do you know?
Well, we don't.
Yeah,
but
right.
So it's... Remember, we're talking about educators here. We don't have smoke-filled rooms.
Teacher's lounge.
We
that's
teach
right.
children that smoking is wrong.
That's right. The process is probably like other Democratic organizations with the little d.
You mean sort of like Democratic Party in the General Assembly?
No. We obviously got our stuff done.
Yeah.
So it starts
sort of.
With our Government Relations Committee. And we talked a little bit online about our bylaws. And what they do is they tell our Government Relations Committee to recommend candidates to our Board of Directors and Rep Council.
Right.
And then our...
How big is that committee?
It depends on the year, because in an election year, it swells. This year, 15-ish.
Okay.
And
out of 5,000 members.
Yeah, and 8,000 if you're talking about the number of people that we represent when we're talking about contract
so
negotiations.
So 15 people make the decision for 8,000 people?
Not at all. 15 people recommend to their board of directors, of which I'm a member, so that's my level,
right.
And then to the rep council. And what our rep council does in our bylaws is sets the policy of the organization. So I'll tell you that I took the unusual step of arguing for Alan Dyer.
Yeah.
I did. And
you endorsed him first time around, didn't you?
We did.
Yeah.
And I lost. You know, that argument did not carry the day.
Why do you like Alan so much?
Why do I like Alan?
Yeah, but why do you think he's a good board member?
Is it because he's the renegade on the board and kind of keeps them in check? He prevents them from rubber stamping things.
I mean, obviously, you're out of touch with the rest of the county because
I know.
So, just what is it about?
And my members. Think about it.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
our reps who disagreed and set the policy. Remember, they.
But you, as the leader, I'm just curious. What do you like about Alan?
I like about Alan that we approach him and he listens to us. When we were talking about the middle school program of studies, which we felt like was a terrible decision, and it surprised us very much. Last November, there was a meeting on the same day for me and the chief academic officer of the school system. She said, hey, this is what we're going to do. And they were telling reading teachers and related arts teachers at the same time, this is what we're going to do. We're going to eliminate the teaching of reading in the middle schools, and we're going to cut planning time in half for these folks and increase the course load, I'm sorry, the student load by double it. We thought these things are really a bad idea. We approached every board member, and it's Alan Dyer who threw the whole thing, along with Cynthia Valancourt, were so solid in questioning the rationale for that. And I should add Tomi Williams, the student member, 100% on that. But I like that we were able to appeal to the rational side of him. And he listened to it.
There is a rational side to him?
I think so. We're going to the Supreme Court next week. The Arizona immigration law, Mr. Dyer and I are going to hear the case. They won't ask for our opinion, but...
Right. Can't imagine why.
I know.
So, I'm the parent of a sixth grader.
Okay.
I happen to oppose the decision as well.
Sure.
Okay.
And there was diversity of opinion inside our unit.
But I'm curious. A lot of other school systems have moved towards this. Was it because members of yours were going to lose their jobs?
No, that was never on the table.
That was not at all a factor
in
opposing it.
No, nobody was going to lose their job. And that's a common misconception that we were against this because someone was going to get fired. It just
wasn't. Well, we all know teachers don't get fired, so we'll come to that.
We'll get there, right?
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
And I think that's really interesting. Yeah, I really do.
What was it that really drove the decision to support, to be against that movement, to eliminate reading? And the other things that came with it, because that's not alone.
This thing was driven by a schedule. The idea was to impose a 7-period day, like the high schools, in the middle schools. And the thing that did not fit was a reading class. The state regulations require everything else. They don't require a course called reading. Mm. And the rationale that was given that other counties were moving away from reading isn't entirely true.
I see.
What we don't see is counties cutting minutes of instruction in whatever they call English or language arts or reading. We didn't see that, and that is what we saw in Howard. We saw a reduction of the amount of time that a student would spend in their English class or whatever it was. It used to be in Howard that one class was English and one class was called reading, and they were 90 minutes a day. They're now being in English class for 50 minutes a day, and that we hadn't seen, that big reduction with the focus on writing that the Common Core standards are going to drive, that was unique for us.
I'm actually with you. We're all agreement on that. I mean, my daughter is at Ellica Mills and eighth grade, and she loves a reading teacher. It's one of the highlights of her day.
Yeah, sure.
His name escapes me right now, but I mean, he's very engages the students a lot and gets them excited about books. And which...
So one of the other things, and I know we're jumping all over a little bit.
It's
I apologize
fun.
For that, but
we
one
do
of the,
that.
One of the other things that came out of this decision was to increase, I believe, physical education.
Love it.
And you love that.
Yeah.
So let me challenge you on that a little bit. You know, my position is school is about learning, and it's parents that are allowing their kids to get fat.
Sure.
By eating the wrong foods and letting them play video games too many hours a day instead of sending them outside to go ride a bike like you did. So where's the line between parents and teachers or between parents and the school system? Because it seems to me, I'm for it. I love that my kids are active. I love that they're engaged. I love that my kids love to go outside and play. I'm just not sure if it's my responsibility as a parent or your responsibility as educators.
You know, I think it's what you tell us to do, really. You know, when I always liked having a curriculum writer say, this is what you're going to teach, and then my job figure out how, right? So I don't really care. Mm-hmm. If you say, teach a kid how to stay in shape their whole life and make that your PE mission, fine, I'm going to go do it. If you say, teach about this, So, you know, as for whether that's really the mission of the school, I do like it. You know, personally, I think one of the things that I would teach first is how you take care of yourself. But I see your point. You know, same with the food, right?
Right,
right, right.
So let me delve deeper then. So what I'm hearing you say is I don't have a strong opinion about the curriculum as much as I've got.
If you wanted me to teach creationism, I would.
Well, no, and I'm not trying to trap you into something.
Okay, no,
like
go
that.
Ahead.
As much
I'm
as,
sorry.
No, it's okay. As much as I'm saying that it sounds like you're committed to teaching, and if you think that the higher powers believe that this should be the curriculum, then you're going to teach it because that's what you're committed to do as an educator.
Right.
Okay.
Going back, I want to get this before we run out of time. We often say, and you welcome this topic, it's hard to get rid of a bad teacher.
Okay.
I mean, that's the general perception, is that, you know, the union protects even the teachers that probably shouldn't be protected.
Okay.
You get this a lot.
All the time.
How difficult is it to get rid of a teacher in Howard County?
We would know if any...
Because nobody's ever got rid of them.
Right. We would know the answer to your question if administrators ever rated them unsatisfactory. In all, you mentioned there were 5,000 some teachers. You know how many the school system rated unsatisfactory last year?
How many?
22.
Did they all lose their jobs?
I have no idea. They don't publish that. Let me go a little further with that point. You know the number of principals that were unsatisfactory?
No.
Goose egg.
I'm holding up a zero. None.
Who rates them? The other
administrators, area directors in our system. So, look, the problem, it doesn't start with us. If we get in the way of removing a bad teacher, then I agree with you. Then we're part of the problem. But I don't think we do that. I think what happens is the system fails to first identify teachers that need help, and second, give them that help. That's one of the reasons that I'm skipping ahead. Why I'm excited about Dr. Foose being our superintendent.
Yeah.
He's coming from Montgomery County, where they do a system called...
Baltimore County.
Immediately Baltimore County, but she's got more administrative background in Montgomery.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
She was only in Baltimore for a year.
Okay.
And in Montgomery, they were doing the peer assistance and review program for all their new teachers and their teachers that were unsatisfactory, their struggling teachers. And what it meant was a committee of expert educators hired specifically for that were looking at the struggling teachers and the new teachers and weekly giving them feedback on how to improve. And in that process, which now half their workforce has gone through, they've let hundreds of teachers go when they totally showed and tried that they delivered what these folks needed to get better, and they weren't able
to do
it.
And they didn't improve, yeah.
We're lacking that piece in our system, and I'm excited to be part of it. We talked about it yesterday.
Dr. Foose will introduce that to the system, you think?
She didn't say she will, but she said that we have potential for a pilot right off the bat.
Okay.
How much of these statistics that you threw out about teachers not really ever being terminated or really being unfavorably reviewed comes from what I'm going to describe as a parent as a perception that teachers teach to the test to make sure that they get federal funding, to make sure they get their state funding.
No teacher left behind.
No teacher left behind. Race to the top. As long as they're doing what they need to do to make sure that the scores that come out of standardized testing are successful or are good, they make the county look good, you know what? Let's leave it well enough alone. We're getting our federal funding. We're getting our state funding. The standardized tests are good. You know what? We're not going to rock the boat.
How much of the problem happens because of that?
Yeah, you know what? It's all good. We're getting our money. The test results are good. So let's not rock the boat. Obviously, things can't be that bad with these teachers because, look, we've got
the results are there.
Right.
You know, it's hard to say. I would argue that the attrition rate for teachers is so high. And nationally, it's about 50% leave the profession in their first 5 years.
Right.
And in Howard, it's about half that, about 25%. It's still a really high number. I would argue that that...
They become realtors.
Yeah, maybe. that organic aspect of losing a lot of the people who are having a lot of difficulty, you've got to think you probably leave a job because it's hard for you.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe you're not feeling satisfied, you're not able to do it well, whatever it is.
But you know, that happens across the board a lot of businesses. People start a job out of college.
So you're
sure
suggesting that we lose the bad teachers?
I'm suggesting we certainly lose some. And then that culture of you must teach this, you must produce results on a test that will show us that you taught that, and therefore you know everyone who does that is okay. I do think that contributes to the problem. And then here in Howard County, we're blessed that we've got the resources to do what we need to do, right? So the buildings are right, the technology is right, the pay and benefits are right. They really are. And so we're a magnet for teachers around the state.
I was going to say, Howard County, you get the cream of the crop. Right?
We know that we have hundreds more applicants than we have jobs, so we hope we get the cream of the crop.
Right.
We imagine that our teachers are probably, we know for a fact they're more experienced. I think we probably have better teachers as a result of those processes.
So he said the pay and benefits are right. So I think what he was really saying was we can forego raises this year.
Again, I don't make all those decisions.
We twist things around.
I know. You know what's interesting is people are always surprised to hear me say that, but it's the truth. Our pay and benefits are reasonable. No one gets rich in K-12 education, but are we starving? No.
Right.
No. This county takes good care of its educators.
I want to circle back to a topic we talked about early on and just make sure that we address this one issue. So, Andalusia now has sort of passed that first threshold.
Yeah, the primary.
Yeah. Into getting in on the Board of Education.
Yeah,
first cut. What's the balance that should exist on the Board of Education with respect to teacher union representation? Because obviously, having been a predecessor of yours in your position, that's a pretty loud voice on the board, and I'm curious.
You think Anne's loud?
No. Not. I don't mean her as an individual.
I'm
she is.
She is loud.
She is loud.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she's loud. She likes throwing rocks.
But I don't think that's necessarily fair.
What is the right composition from your perspective?
She's all of them. All of them.
For a successful board.
All of them.
Oh my God. Yeah. The teachers union should control the Board of Education.
Absolutely.
Well, you know what? I appreciate your candor.
Look, people are telling us that we're taking over the Board of Education. I don't know if you guys remember last summer, but I was out there really hard against appointments. Do you guys remember that?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And I don't mind telling you that was
Ken's ill-fated attempt to reshape the board.
It's
not dead.
With Feli Sola Carter and Sean Hightower, I wrote The Fiery Dissent.
Yes, I know.
Right? And we don't control the Board of Education. Even if I could put six of my predecessors or seven of my predecessors on, I could tell Ann DeLacy what to do.
No, but you're...
That's a great point.
Yeah, but your endorsement is pretty much cherished. So there's a beholding, you've endorsed... Let me see, you've endorsed Brian Meshkin?
We have.
You've endorsed Cindy Valancourt?
No. I want to say...
Alan Dyer?
Yes.
Yeah. Who are some of the other notables?
Giles, Siddiqui, Aquino... Okay.
So you've endorsed Siddiqui and Giles before.
I'm positive about Ellen. I'm not positive about Janet, but I believe we have.
But and you blamed, or your committee blamed them for the dysfunction in the board.
Look, what we said in our letter to them after that ridiculous blow up over the phone-in vote is that they can't let their interpersonal animosity substitute for the business of the school system.
Now, I'm going to take a second. You call it ridiculous. You know, when you have a board member that is trying to run a business in California and also serve on the board, you're not serving the citizens of Howard County by phoning in your attendance at a board meeting.
I agree.
Yeah, that to me, he should resign. If he can't make the meetings and he has to be phoned in. So I agree with the board saying, well, hold on, Peter Powell.
The blow up there was him.
Yeah.
He got what he wanted. He got to vote. And then he publicly aired all that dirty laundry like it was going to help. that was my problem with it. Like, yeah, I don't think someone should vote by proxy. I don't think they should vote in absentia. The central cornerstone of the democracy is you show up.
Yeah, you're there.
You face the music.
Absolutely.
And you
debate. You want that opportunity to have dialogue.
You can't do that by telecom.
Right. You got to let the citizen be able to come up to you and say, no, don't vote for this, or do vote for this, or whatever.
And by his own admission, he's missed a lot of meetings.
The reason I brought it back to last summer is because I want the voters to do this. And yes, I want our association to have a role. But what I was asking people last summer is, do you want us in that smoke-filled room going up to the county executive and say, these are our guys for Board of Ed? Or do you want us playing in the elections? Do you want us putting it out there and saying, these are the people we recommend, we think you should take a look at them? Or should it be that we say, we're going to impeach Dyer, we're going to force this one to resign, we're going to play in the appointment game? We've been very, very strong about the democratic, little d, aspect of Board of Education elections when it may not even serve our interests.
We're running out of time.
But this is fun.
I just realized.
And you know what? I've got a whole list of things I'd love to keep talking about. So maybe we'll have you back after the election.
Guys, anytime. And, you know,
no, this was good. You know, it's easy to take shots at some people online or, you know, without. But we appreciate you coming by and having a good discussion.
Yeah, we love talking about what we do. I certainly do. I think.
Besides, you're from Wild Lake. Go.
That's right. I think that all unions get a negative rap when what they really do is represent people.
Yeah.
And your question about how well, that's a fair question. And we should look at our processes. I'm new. Our bylaws are not.
Right.
And good leadership should take a look at those processes. So I like talking about it and thinking about it.
Well, good luck with your term and best of luck with your objectives for the year.
Yeah, and thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're joined now by Jaden Ramsing, a student from Wild Lake High School.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What grade are you in?
I'm an 11th grade junior.
Right. Wearing a Wild Lake soccer shirt, too. So for those who are listening, you can't see that. But Jaden has joined us to talk a little bit about a program called Food for Tomorrow. What is Food for Tomorrow?
Food for Tomorrow is a student-run nonprofit organization here in Howard County. There's five students, me from Wild Lake, and there's three students from Long Reach and one from Oakham Mills. And
you have one of your partners here at the other end of the table.
Yeah.
Who's this?
This is Adrian Evans, goes to Long Reach.
Adrian doesn't have a microphone, but we'll say hi, Adrian.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Yeah, and we are interns in the office of Mary Kay Siggety.
Oh, yeah. She's a
council chair here. Food for Tomorrow, our mission statement would be that we work to raise awareness, food, and money for the Howard County Food Bank here, which is run by the Community Action Council.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite organizations.
Yeah.
And so you've got a display here in the mall to help raise awareness of your...
Yeah, actually, right down by Lord and Taylor at Center Court, we have something called our Building with Cans event. And to raise awareness here, we built three different sculptures out of canned food. And we have several signs out there just telling people, because in a county like Howard County, one of the richest counties in the entire country, people usually wouldn't think that there's people that are hungry here.
Yeah.
So we're definitely trying to raise awareness and show that there are people that suffer with food insecurity.
And this pyramid's been up for how long now?
It's been about 2 weeks. We're taking it down this Sunday.
Okay.
But we'll have volunteers there Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4 if anybody wants to come and see. And
So this is a nonprofit that the five of you basically run?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's great.
And how much money have you raised so far?
This year, I'm not sure.
Do you have a goal? Or what?
Our goal is $25,000.
Wow.
So we're really...
That's awesome.
We're shooting for the stars this year.
What was it last year?
Last year, our goal was $5,000, but we end up raising $15,000.
Way to go. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Right, whenever you make your goal and blow it away like that 1 year, you got to kick it way up the next year, right?
That's right. Well, it's a terrific program. Mary Kay has told us about it. We're big fans of it, and we really appreciate you guys getting involved and making that happen. Especially for the food for the food bank. And thanks for coming by and sharing that with us.
Thank you.
And Adrian, thank you too. That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on May 4th with another 40 minutes of local news and commentary. We hope you'll join us.